You're listening to Back in the USSR.
Да здравствует 60-я годовщина Великой Октябрьской социалистической революции. Да здравствует героический советский народ и его доблестные вооруженные силы. Слава Коммунистической партии Советского Союза, руководящей и направляющей силе советского общества. Ура!
Thank you.
Yeah. Look, I wish there wasn't no system. I wish death on almost every other politician. I wish freedom for all my brothers stuck in prison. I wish people weren't led by the television. I wish the kids turn against the media. Don't believe everything you read on Wikipedia. Africa, I wish that we were feeding you and not raping your wealth. I wish that people thought about somebody else before themselves. Listen, then maybe then we'd all live good be. If you need it, then I got that the way it should be. Life's nowhere near where it could be. Sometimes I wish that I was low-key and they come and took me. Cause I feel kinda bad in my heart, cause I threw the first bang, so it's hard, yeah, we bust case. iTunes number one, yeah, forget pace. Forget any other offers that the labels make.
I wish that I were wrong for right. And I wish that I could change my life. So my kids will never have to sacrifice like I did. So I give and they live. People have to realize that we live. We're living in some crazy time. And I wish that we would organize. And I wish
for peace in every country. I wish for a stressless life for my mommy. I wish that no kid went hungry, cause trust me, if I had enough money, I'd fill up every hungry kid's tummy. I wish that money gets abolished, so anyone can give everything to their kids. Never can't afford it. I wish the whole world was able to live lawless. I wish there wasn't no such thing as being the poorest. I wish we didn't know what more is. I wish that everyone saw everyone as beautiful and gorgeous. I wish for a lot of things. I wish that I was young and I still played for Kent and Kings. Look, I don't wish for the fame or the glamour. I wish for everyone to understand us. See, what I really wish for will probably never be. I wish Africa and Palestine were free.
I wish that I were wrong for right. And I wish that I could change my life. So my kids will never have to sacrifice like I did. So I give and they live. People have to realize that we live. We're living in some crazy time. And I wish that we would organize. And I wish
see freedom for the Irish, and I wish you could see deeper than my iris as I write this. I wish people would define it in a way that wasn't dictated by dividers and conquerors. Tell us conscious is what our genre is. You think their dominance is monstrous, but a bomb isn't stronger than a continent. Tell us we're incompetent, that's nonsense. We're just onto them, our confidence is shocking them. Not all open hands and open mouths. Dry your tears, cause the pioneers, the global south. That is why we're here. Never will I appear on Oprah's couch. Only in the press when the feds put my photo out. They wonder why the mad and young are grabbing guns. Why? But you would speak with your hands if you didn't have a tongue. Even that's better than sitting down. Sad a number of times wish I was Gabalons and I was about to have a son. Scratch that, had a baby girl. Live twice and bring life to this crazy world. Beyond rap, congrats for the new arrival. I'm stuck in Britain, accustomed to living suicidal. But not for much longer. I realise that our culture is a weapon, and nowadays I'm much stronger. Simply to exist is what I wish. Retirement or not, what I have written is timeless.
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. This is Siegfried. And that was, I decided to start the show off a little bit differently today. That was Logic featuring Low Key and Renee Soul, the song I Wish, from his 2014 album Spectator. And I just want to take the time and the opportunity tonight to shine a light on an issue that is both local and global in scale, and that's the issue of homelessness, a very real life and death issue for many thousands of people in this country, in North America, and in many other countries. As social programs are cut, rents are raised, the cost of living explodes, and genuinely affordable public housing remains unbuilt. And that's the case in Guelph right now. Last Saturday, November 3rd, I took part in a rally in front of City Hall in downtown Guelph to call for urgent action to be taken and urgent assistance given to the homeless brothers and sisters in this city before the onset of winter, which is coming up very fast now. It's getting colder. People are literally going to die unless action is taken. It was a small crowd. Not many people want to show up to these things when they happen on a cold, rainy, and altogether grim November midday. Most people who did show up were part of the group Your Downtown Guelph Friends, which my friend Kate started earlier this year, and which gathers donations and provides support to the growing homeless population in downtown Guelph. There were also a number of allies and supporters, but nowhere near enough given the urgency of the problem. And a number of people spoke at the rally, in particular calling for the immediate establishment of a new overnight shelter for the homeless here in Guelph without any curfews. Kate rightly pointed out that this is not something that long-term strategies will fix. Action needs to happen right now. I'll quote her, "This is a do or die moment. People need shelter now or they will die." She rightly spoke about how our current shelter system is inadequate. This is a direct quote. "Our current shelter system is inadequate, with limited amounts of beds, inaccessible shelter locations, and red tape procedures, such as having to reserve beds beforehand and having curfews earlier than 8 p.m., which makes it impossible for people to get back in time for dinner programs, makes it extremely evident that there's extreme issues. These people are human. They do deserve community support. It's their right." Other people spoke too. There was quite a list of speakers, actually, at the rally, calling for the creation of a medical detox center for recovering addicts and pointing out that homelessness and addiction are systemic issues in society. They go hand in hand in many cases. And I want to play a spoken word poem now by an amazing Indigenous poet named Zacchaeus Jackson, which delves into both of these things. It's called Dominoes. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
"I remember smoking cracker rocks with his mom. We all called him the kid, but his real name was Dom. And the dominant factor in Dominic's life was the fact that his jacked up mom couldn't put down the crack pipe. He was an 11-year-old kid out on the streets way too late because there ain't no food at home and he didn't want to eat toothpaste again. And he just got chased again down that dark alley by some creepy old guy. And is it okay if maybe he just stands by me while he catches his breath for a second? And by the second or third time, I'm not much of a secular guy, but I start to believe that there really must not be a God up in that sky. Why? Because no one deserves to grow up like this. Some days he'd make it to school, other days, not so much. I wish I had more share with him than food, but at the time, crack was my crutch. And I was squeezing windows on the street, so of course I ain't got nothing to give him except something to eat and a safe place to crash now and then when I bounced out my cracked friends. And since one of them got all high and took my stereo apart, we'd just stay up late and play Super Mario Kart and he'd straight kick my ass daily. That kid could drive Yoshi like nobody's business. He'd be flat laughing me fastly, I'd be thinking, what is this? But sooner or later he'd fall asleep on the couch. Next morning I'd wake up, feed him some French toast, and then, peace man, I'm out. I gotta go hit Squeegee Corner. Cracks calling, them dirty windows ain't washing themselves. And I'd walk that kid halfway back into his own personal hell as I fell back into mine in the black back of my mind. I can't forget the regret for each of the times. The kid came back down to the corner only to find that Zach's off getting high, which means, Dom, don't get fed, and he can't even go home to sleep because yesterday he found one of his mom's friends passed out in his bed with a ring in her arm, and he thought she was dead, so he rung 911, but Dom's mom had a warrant, so now Dom's mom's on the run, and he's hungry and homeless, 11 years old, the cops left the apartment, and Calgary's Octobers are cold, and since the truth here be spoken, let the truth now be told. Dominic's a kid made up of the mixture that spilled out of the mold when God overfilled, and it chilled me behold such injustice, killed to know that I helped fuck up his life and then fed him enough so I felt a little bit better about myself. But I tell you, a dark part of my heart ain't had the same stamina since the day Dom came careening, tears streaming, screaming, Zach, Zach, they took away my mom in an ambulance and I don't know if she's okay. Can you help me find her, please? I'll even pay you. And then he tried to give me $6.50 in change. $6.50 in change. So when a strange kind of pain streaked its way straight through my brain, it's for the first time I realized that that 11-year-old boy knew full well that crack had Zach chained to Squeegee Corner just as bad as it had his mom, one overdose closer to the slab of the coroner. And the saddest aspect is that Dom will probably be the only one left to mourn her, because she'd just be one more dead crack whore in her obituary who would have to be written in the dark corners of bad places by Dom's untied shoelaces as he searches for his mother out of habit because it's the only thing he's ever learned to do well. And there are certain pains even Mario Kart can't quell. Last I heard, Dom's 17. He'll be free at 21 because some dumb kid tried to stab him. But damn, Dom had a gun and enough street sense to know that if you're forced to pull your heat in self-defense, aim below the waistline. But they still give him 4 years for drug possession and an unregistered 9. But seriously, what'd you expect? This kid came of age in a storm. I can't find fault in a freezing man who steals firewood to stay warm. And what I'm trying to say is that in the process of surviving, some of these kids get so slick they could slip between comma and prose. This piece of poetry is first-hand proof that even children can fall like dominoes. So Dom, forgive Zach's next action. I know your past is far from a joke. But since you slipped through the cracks and all the crack that I smoked, with this half-sick sort of smile and this slap-happy sadness, I pay tribute to the beauty of this child of night and madness.
Listening to Back in USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU, that was the K.S. Jackson's poem Dominoes. Amazing poet, Z.K.S. Jackson, his indigenous poet from Calgary, I believe, and unfortunately he's no longer with us, but he inspired one hell of a lot of people. I mean, I know so many poets on the spoken word scene in Canada who've just, you know, been inspired by that, by this man. And he left a legacy, no question about it, of just inspiration and solidarity and just support and just loving. And, you know, he knew the kinds of things that, of course, like homeless people, like indigenous people, like a lot of indigenous, you know, indigenous people are, do face homelessness disproportionately. And of course face victimization by the cops and like, by the system as it exists and all of this, by the colonial system as it exists. I also spoke at the rally, on Saturday, trying to draw attention to the issue of homelessness in the city. And, even though the full speech and those of the other speakers at the rally can be found on Adam Donaldson's YouTube channel. Adam Donaldson of Guelph Politico, you know, does the show on CFRU. You know, given that he graciously filmed the entire event, he was there the whole time, you know, filmed the whole rally. You know, even though he filmed it, I want to run through my speech again for you all because I'm honestly happy about the speech and what I said. I feel that I don't address local concerns enough on this show, and I should do that more often. But in this speech, I think I managed to connect local concerns with international concerns. But you can be the judge of that. I mean, the speech that I gave at the rally goes like this. Basically said, my name's Siegfried, and before I say anything else, I want you to repeat after me. Housing is a human right. Louder. Housing is a human right. Louder. Housing is a human right. Thank you, brothers and sisters. You were loud. And we got to be loud. Because capitalist politicians have a terrible habit of thinking that having a roof over your head is just an optional accessory in life. And it takes a loud voice to reach people like that. We shouldn't have to do this. We shouldn't have to be standing here now. We shouldn't have to be calling on you good people for donations. And our people shouldn't be freezing on the streets in the winter because they don't have housing. They shouldn't have to brave the cold, the snow, the ice, not having a safe place to come home to. None of this should exist. Because housing is a human right. And there's more than enough resources in this society to solve this crisis. But it hasn't been solved. Why? Because we live in a society, in a culture, in a system, a capitalist system that views certain people as surplus, as valueless, as throwaways, unprofitable. And as a socialist, as a believer in socialism, as someone who rejects running society according to the profit motive, this kind of thing is horrific to me. It's a crime. It's an abomination. It's murder. But these folks in City Hall, and the folks at Queen's Park, and the folks on Parliament Hill, let alone the folks on Bay Street and Wall Street, think it's normal to have people living on the streets without housing, without adequate shelter, trying to survive in the freezing cold. And I'm not surprised, nor should you be, brothers and sisters, because when I say that I'm a socialist, I can see the alarm bells going off in some of your heads out there. I can see the stereotypes bubbling up and rising to the surface. I know that some of you are thinking police state and third world poverty and historic failure and all that kind of stuff. Some of you might even be looking for a mental backdoor right now and thinking, oh, by socialism, he must mean Sweden, Denmark, some nice country like that, not Cuba. Well, I hate to break it to y'all, but it's just a fact. It just happens to be a fact that Cuba has eliminated homelessness and Sweden has not. And Cuba is a poor country. It's a poor country. It was kept down by centuries of colonialism. And even after it had a revolution in 1959 to overthrow that legacy of oppression, it was held down by a blockade and all kinds of sanctions that, as it still is to this day, as the United States continues its aggressive campaign to overthrow the Cuban Revolutionary Government. Cuba's been dealt a difficult hand, no doubt about it. But it still managed to do something that no rich capitalist country on the planet has ever been able to do, and that is put a roof over everybody's head. Why? Because that's what happens when you have a system that puts the needs of people first and where the profit motive is not in command of society. But so many Canadians would dismiss the Cuban example. Just dismiss it outright. Just throw it away. Like it doesn't matter. Like it doesn't have any meaning. Because we think we're better than the Cubans. We think we're better than people in the global south, in the third world, in Africa, Asia, and Latin America. And we don't want to learn from those we perceive as lesser, poorer, underprivileged, non-white. We think, we feel that we should be telling them what to do. Telling them what's good. Telling them what they should do. Even when we so badly need the lessons that they can give us. And we so badly need to listen to them and learn from their example. So we don't listen to them. We don't let them teach us lessons. Just like we don't listen to indigenous peoples in this country who live on reservations where they can't even drink their own water. So we don't listen to Cuba and draw lessons from the Cuban example on eliminating homelessness and putting a roof over everyone's head. Why should we be surprised? Why should we be surprised when capitalist politicians, who are all about the profit motive and keeping the markets primed and the corporations happy, Why should we be surprised when they don't really care about those that our society writes off as failures and throws them under the bus? There really is a sickness in this country, brothers and sisters, and its symptoms are really nasty. It blocks our ears, clouds our eyes, stops us from perceiving the truth and coming to the understanding that it does not have to be this way. That everyone has a right to eat, drink, have a job, have a life, have a home, have an education, have medical care when they need it. All people have the right to live. But no one has the right to colonize. Thank you all very much.
Si quiere conocer a Martí y a Fidel,
a Cuba, y a Cuba iré.
Si quiere conocer los caminos del Che,
a Cuba, y a Cuba iré.
Si quiere tomar ron pero sin Coca-Cola,
a Cuba, y a Cuba iré.
Si quiere trabajar en la caña de azúcar,
a Cuba, y a Cuba iré.
En un barquito se va al vaivén,
a Cuba, y a Cuba iré.
Si quiere conocer a Martí y a Fidel,
a Cuba, y a Cuba iré.
Si quiere conocer a Martí y a Fidel,
a Cuba, y a Cuba iré.
Si quiere conocer los caminos del Che,
a Cuba, y a Cuba iré.
Si quiere tomar ron pero sin Coca-Cola,
a Cuba, y a Cuba iré.
Si quiere trabajar en la caña de azúcar,
a Cuba, y a Cuba iré.
En un barquito se va al vaivén,
a Cuba, y a Cuba iré.
Si quiere conocer a Martí y a Fidel,
a Cuba, y a Cuba iré.
Si quiere conocer los caminos del Che,
a Cuba, y a Cuba iré.
Si quiere tomar ron pero sin Coca-Cola,
a Cuba, y a Cuba iré.
Si quiere trabajar en la caña de azúcar,
a Cuba, y a Cuba iré.
Watching the parade on the news last night, I was one that walked that road before, where everything feels like it's crumbling, like the writing's on the wall. But dreams are broken, mended, and they scatter like seeds they fall, and then the fruit is gathered. It always was and always will be a struggle to fulfill. Stay strong and heed the call. It still matters to me. I hope it matters to you. First principle. Concrete action, reconciliation, no more talk. Fix the system, build it strong and give it purpose. Stop complaining, look at nurses, no material privation. In the fine open cut nation, blinded by the infant need, whose appetite is never filled, whose appetite is never filled, till every living thing is killed. A selfish few still fight for more in a planet smashing selfish world. We are taken, escalated to the woolies in the sky, to reprise Dante's inferno. Disguise. Across a windswept open plain, some still go against the grain, against the waste, the opulescent saddle sneaking, creeping up on you, breaking bread at the riverbank, washing nappies at the water tank. Happy clappy days are numbered, tumbler grinder, drag you under, mixed emotions cost us dearly, years of self-absorption really, electric car and white gazebos, gadgets that can't save our world, but one side has an excavator, the other has a wooden spoon, self-centered sick celebrities are crowding out the room. It is obvious and glorious, self-evident, laborious, to tame this monster once and for all, name it, shame it, rearrange it, so the dream becomes the real, and we can feel and we can see, dream becomes the real, we can dream and we can see.
Yeah.
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. Just did a couple of little quick set there. Started with Victor Jara, you know, the Chilean communist singer who, of course, was killed in Pinochet's coup in 1973 when the right-wing dictatorship took power in Chile. And that was his song, A Cuba, from his 1971 album, El Derecho de Vivir en Paz, The Right to Live in Peace, is what that translates to. And that's the anthem, as I've talked about. I talked about in last week's show, that's the anthem of the protesters right now in Chile as they go up against the neoliberal right-wing government there and are demonstrating in the streets and holding the biggest demonstrations in that country's history. Now, before the... And after that, of course, I had Peter Garrett, the former singer of the Australian band Midnight Oil, with his song It Still Matters, which I think was an appropriate song to play here tonight, as, of course, I talk about issues such as homelessness. Now, at the conclusion of my speech at the rally, you know, of course, I just read the speech I gave just before the break. At the conclusion of my speech at the rally last Saturday in front of City Hall in downtown Guelph, I read a poem. And it was the same poem that I've read on this show before, entitled The Bread of the People by Bertolt Brecht, German communist poet. And it's probably my friend Danny's favorite Brecht poem. So I'd like to read it again. I read it at the rally. I've read it on the show, and I'd like to read it again on the show. So let's launch right into that, because it's just a amazing poem, and I think it deserves way more time than it actually gets. So this is called The Bread of the People by Bertolt Brecht. Justice is the bread of the people. Sometimes it is plentiful. Sometimes it is scarce. Sometimes it tastes good. Sometimes it tastes bad. When the bread is scarce, there is hunger. When the bread is bad, there is discontent. Throw away the bad justice, baked without love, kneaded without knowledge. Justice without flavor, with a gray crust, the stale justice which comes too late. If the bread is good and plentiful, the rest of the meal can be excused. One cannot have plenty of everything all at once. Nourished by the bread of justice, the work can be achieved from which plenty comes. As daily bread is necessary, so is daily justice. It is even necessary several times a day. From morning till night, at work, enjoying oneself, at work, which is enjoyment, in hard times and in happy times, the people require the plentiful, wholesome, daily bread of justice. Since the bread of justice, then, is so important, who, friends, shall bake it? Who bakes the other bread? Like the other bread, the bread of justice must be baked by the people. Plentiful, wholesome, daily.
In 1649, to St. George's Hill, a ragged band they called the Diggers came to show the people's will. They defied the landlords, they defied the laws. They were the dispossessed, reclaiming what was theirs. We come in peace, they said, to dig and sow. We come to work the lands in common and to make the waste grounds grow. This earth divided, we will make whole. So it will be a common treasury for all. The sin of property we do disdain. No man has any right to buy and sell the earth for private gain. By theft and murder they took the land. Now everywhere the walls spring up at their command. They make the laws,
shine us well. The clergy dazzle us with heaven, or they damn us into hell. We will not worship the God they serve, the God of greed who feeds the rich while poor men starve. We work, we eat together, we need no swords. We will not bow to the masters or pay rent to the lords. We are free men, though we are poor. Diggers all stand up for glory, stand up now. From the men of property, the orders came. They sent the hired men and troopers to wipe out the diggers' claim, tear down their cottages, destroy their corn. They were dispersed, but still the vision lingers on. You poor take courage, you rich take care. This earth was made a common treasury for everyone to share. All things in common, all people one. We come in peace, the orders came to cut them down.
You're listening to Back in the USSR. That was Billy Bragg with The World Turned Upside Down, which is a very iconic, like, English folk song singing about resistance to the enclosure movement, peasant resistance to the enclosure movement in the 17th century, where the peasants would actually occupy land and resist the landowners trying to enclose and privatize that land and drive them off their, you know, basically drive the peasants off their land into the city slums at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. It's a very iconic, like, labor movement song, actually. The world turned upside down. And of course, before that, I performed Bertolt Brecht's poem, The Bread of the People, which I read at the rally pressing for justice for the homeless in front of Guelph City Hall last Saturday. Now, last week on the show, last episode of the show, I talked about the uprisings going on in all over the world. In Ecuador, Chile, Haiti, Iraq, Lebanon, and elsewhere. And the common theme that these protests have is that they're up against a capitalism gone berserk, you know, a capitalist regime, neoliberal regime of austerity that has slashed just about every human service down to almost nothing, just cut it to the bone, so that the Fortune 500 and the IMF can keep lining their pockets with fat profits, basically. You know, like, that's what it's about. It's just, you know, the capitalist class taking and taking and accumulating and accumulating, and you know, working class people, oppressed and working class people, you know, they're left with nothing. And people aren't taking it anymore. People aren't taking it anymore. You know, they're rising up and fighting back all over the world. And just like I said last week, you know, international solidarity to them, you know, like from me and from my comrades and my brothers and sisters here in Guelph, we all extend international solidarity to them, to our comrades worldwide, brothers and sisters worldwide. And I'd like to round out the show by playing an interview that I did back in 2015 that I'm still quite proud of, that I did with progressive author and scholar Michael Parenti about his book, Profit Pathology and Other Indecencies, which really gives a pretty thorough overview of the austerity that we're now faced with all around the world. You know, the situation that we're now in, you know, Doug Ford's Ontario and, you know, Justin Trudeau's Canada and, like, you know, Donald Trump's America and all over the place. You know, like, this is the force that we're fighting against, we're up against a capitalism gone berserk, a monster that we have to fight back against and ultimately slay. And only working class and oppressed people rising up and standing in solidarity together can defeat this beast that we're up against and which is just driving us down, you know, and squeezing us dry. You know, like, we all have to stand together. So please stay tuned to Back in the USSR. This is the interview I did with Michael Parenti in 2015 on his book, Profit Pathology and Other Indecencies. Okay, hello everyone. You're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. We are speaking to Dr. Michael Parenti, progressive author and scholar based in Berkeley, California. And we're going to talk to him about his recent book, which I believe just came out in April of this year. It's called Profit Pathology and Other Indecencies. And you can read more of Michael's stuff at michaelparenti.org. And I'll mention that again later on. So hello, Michael. How's it going?
Hello. How are you, Siegfried?
Pretty good. It's been a while since we last talked, so I'm glad we got this opportunity to do so, especially in light of, well, I mean, just everything that's been going on in the world now and, like, the appropriate timing, I think, of this this book you've just put out. So,
thank you.
Yeah, if we maybe could just kind of launch right into things. My first question is basically if you could just outline what is austerity.
Well, austerity is the imposition, the imposing upon the working people a scarcity and hardship, and that's done by those at the top who work us.
Mm-hmm.
And who have all sorts of political rallies where they talk about the loafers and the lazy people and who don't want to work and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they blame, the poor are always blamed for their own poverty. They are seen as the authors of their own poverty when in fact that's not true. And the truth is that wealth creates poverty. In many instances, poverty is the creation of by wealth. I mean, slaves wasn't their laziness. They put in 18-hour days of toil of all kinds, and the plantation owners' wealth and luxury and accumulation was from the exploitation of the poor. So that's how you get wealth. A few people will expropriate the land and labor and resources of everybody else. Well, anyway, that's one of the points one has to make. Mm-hmm. What was it you were asking again?
Well, this is what is austerity, basically, right? Like, of course, we're hearing this term like all the time. These days, like, about austerity, the need for austerity. It's like the language, the chosen language, you could say, of the elite, which is kind of imposing this. And you see in Europe, we see in North America, we see, like, really all over the world now since the recession.
They don't want to say homelessness and hunger and no access to medical care.
Right.
You know, they call it austerity, you know, like learn to curb and don't be a freeloader and all that, when in fact it's the rich, it's that 1% or one fraction of 1% at the top that is really the freeloader. Nobody goes to the government for more handouts than the very, very super rich. They they have enormous amounts of policies and programs for their own benefit. If I don't lose my voice here, I think you got my point.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, and it almost seems like austerity is almost like a feature of the capitalist system in general. It's just the word maybe has kind of come into vogue, but I mean, they've been doing this for a long time, right?
Yeah, they most certainly have been doing it for a long time. Yes, that's correct. Yes. And whenever there was a set of circumstances at World War II that changed things around a bit. We came out of a deep depression that had lasted about 15 years. I mean, the New Deal did a lot of good things, but, you know, it never really got the U.S. out of its depression. And then came the war.
Mm-hmm.
The war was actually a lot of good-paying jobs for people. The ruling class spent amounts of money to kill people and destroy towns and cities, an amount that it would not spend in peacetime to get people out of the depression. But that war got people out of the depression. 9 million American men, mostly men, almost all men, came back from the war, and there was a GI Bill that was passed for them. And that was a remarkable thing, because unlike the GI Bill today, where where veterans have to also get a job on the side, and mm-hmm. or take out student loans or whatever else, the GI Bill does not help them the way it promised to really do. But in those days, it did, and it also gave money for small businesses to start and all that. So there was a tremendous burst of prosperity, of spending. there was a pileup of money that people had from 4 years of working in the defense plants where they couldn't spend that money because all those factories were not making refrigerators and stoves and cars. They were making bombs and planes and tanks and things of that sort. So this combination of things, plus there was not a stripping down, and there was a big stripping down of the military, of course, but a substantial military was kept going 1946-47 because of the Cold War was starting. The Red Army was on the Elbe. The big communist parties in France and Italy. The workers in Western Europe were developing social democracies. They were getting free medical care. They were getting job programs, free education. These things that they were doing that because people in Eastern Europe were getting the same kinds of things, and it was a sort of a historic compromise. Which we had to, keep up with the Reds. And here, here in the communist countries, people spent only one tenth of their salary for rent. They had free medical care. They had free education up to the highest level of their abilities. They had very subsidized and improved transportation, and all these kind of things were happening. So the West had to do some of the same things, and it was what were being built then in those days was you had a well-being that had never existed quite like that before in the West, and that's when the mythology also emerged that America is the land of prosperity, and for whatever prosperity, they really advertised it and ideologized it, if I can create a word. It was part of the ideology that only in America we have everybody's got a car now, and the whole transportation infrastructure was built with government money, people's public money, to subsidize the automotive industry. And these super highways were built and all of that at public expense for the trucking industry and the automotive industry's benefit. And this went on and on. And then when you got to the late 70s, early 80s, they started turning it all around. Reagan came in, and there was the feeling was, enough is enough. We've got to roll this back. And they've done a terrific job of doing just that thing. And so you now have that great, prosperous middle class that we always heard about and all that, now much pitied and much rolled back and going broke in many instances.
Yeah. So of course we see this kind of momentary historical compromise that now is being clawed back, and I guess austerity is the latest incarnation, at least of the language of that rollback.
Right. Austerity and impoverishment and oppression, those were the normal conditions of capitalism in the United States all through the 1800s and the early 1900s and right up until the late part of the 20th century, with 80s or so as a turnaround. And you get more and more of it today. Today you have students graduating college with $75,000 debts, you have the same rollback going on, of course, now in Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
They don't owe the working class anything anymore. They just started rolling them back. And Richard Pipes, of all people, I mean, a conservative like him, I'll give him credit. He didn't suppress the study, but he did the study of all the former communist countries, how things are, and it came out overwhelmingly. People saying it was better under communism,
mm-hmm.
better under communism. You know, the farmers would say it was better. We got subsidies. We could sell our stuff and this and that and students. It was better for them. It was better for public transportation was better. The healthcare system was more equitable and more accessible, and you can go on. So that's what they're really the whole game is really a class struggle game. That's what it is.
Yeah. If I could go back to something you mentioned very briefly before, was just how war is now being like tied in with austerity. You see, like, you know, with austerity now, you see increased rise of interventions of like basically the American military and Western military forces abroad, and increased violence around the world, and increased interventions and these kind of things. So how does that really imperialism tie in with austerity?
Well, imperialism, the empire feeds off the republic. I mean, where does an empire get its operational wealth from? From the republic, from the
mm-hmm.
people. You got to tax the American public. How do you get to tax them, and so that you have a federal budget every year in which 52% is for military purposes? Right there, that's just 52% off the top. And not to mention a lot of other things, military pensions, all sorts of other stuff. But so the way you do that is you convince your public that this is for their safety. We have to control the world, or the world will devour us. And so we've been seeing it again and again and again. Imperialism is an extension, an outgrow of capitalism. But it's also a way of making the world safe for the plutocracy. That's really its great goal, and to provide places for investment and further profit at greater margins than before.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this kind of goes into the whole profit pathology, right? Because, I mean, I think you even said in one of your talks, you know, the whole idea that capitalism can never stay home. Like, it has to keep expanding. And
yes.
If it doesn't expand, I mean, basically it collapses, right? So, I mean, like, imperialism and capitalism, I guess, go hand in hand with regard to that.
It's a mad system. That's mm-hmm. why I said pathology. I mean, yeah, it is a mad system. It's designed to pay workers as little as possible and yet hope that there'll be many workers with lots of spending power to pick up all these commodities and services that I'm creating with these underpaid workers, you know. And my hope is that some other owner will give their workers enough money so they'll have the money to buy up the goods and services that my underpaid workers are creating. But the other owners have the same idea, and they too underpay their workers. And so there's a chronic overproduction. There's a chronic underconsumption. Even though we have a big consumer society, there's all sorts of crap that you got more things, you know, consumer items and gizmos, and even in the area of food, where the food is, some of the fast food stuff is uneatable, but there it is, and expensive and cheap in some cases, but. So imperialism is the outgrowth of capitalism. War brings a false prosperity, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And socialism, what imperialism is socialism coming to the rescue again. Capitalism is always rescued by the government. I mean, the number of programs of research,